Before we start today's podcast, I want to encourage you to go to dogbehaviorconference.com and check out this year's Dog Behavior Conference. It's a three-day live online event available to anyone around the world who loves dogs and wants to live their best life together with them. Registration is open now and seats are going fast, so visit dogbehaviorconference.com and reserve your spot today. That's dogbehaviorconference.com. Now, let's get to the podcast. It's been a long, long time.
Do I have lipstick on my teeth? I'm not used to putting on
lipstick. Oh, Holly, I have missed you so much. Welcome, welcome to the podcast, Holly Furfer. We started this together.
Well, technically, you started it, and then I interloped, and then I went away. But I'm always here for you.
You know, I used to love it. We used to record these podcasts in person.
I know.
And you used to come over to my house, and we'd go down to our studio, which is in the basement of the house. And we would just have fun.
We should have done that this time. Next time. If you have me back, maybe you'll have me back again.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I've really missed you, Holly. And, you know, we don't get to see each other that much because of your job, which takes you around the world, my job, which takes me around the world. And it's always really wonderful to see you in person, but also to talk to you because you have done so much for dogs over your social media and by spreading awareness, especially regarding adoption, breed-specific legislation, puppy mills, and the like. You are a great supporter of various rescue organizations. And you also, you know, you walk the walk because you adopted a very young puppy. But the way that, let's go back to the beginning of how we first met.
Yeah, because a lot
is changed. How did we first meet, Holly?
Well, I had a slight issue. You were doing It's Mir the Dog, and I believe it was wasn't I your first season in the U.S.?
Yes.
That's what I thought. So I was 12, you were 13. And we do not shop and we adopt. That's just a personal choice, which I wholeheartedly support. And we had adopted a black and tan coonhound rescue puppy. And then we had foster failed a bully pit, an American bulldog pit bull. Now, I had had dogs before, but never had a puppy. So I was not used to puppydom. And our bully pit was the sweetest dog in the world, but she liked to chew. And she, I think by the end of it, chewed about $10,000 worth of damage in the house, minimum. So we were at our wit's end. What do we do with this dog? And dun, 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 that's where you came in. The woman that we rescued her from had been in touch with your producers. And I guess you were looking for a pit bull, but not aggression issues.
Because stories.
Yes. And for, especially with pit bulls, they're not more aggressive than any other dog, in my opinion, and no. my very educated now because of your opinion. But she was just chewing a lot because we found out she was bored and she was a puppy. So you came to the rescue and we did an episode, The Monstrous Mutts. And remember, Barnsley, our black and tan coonhound, had some issues because of her. There was a little bit of bullying, resource guarding. It's just a lot. And you helped us. You turned our lives around and now we have new stairs.
Now you have new everything. Because I remember, well, first of all, because you had quite a presence on the radio and also, you know, you did a local morning show. And so I knew you from that. And when they came to me and was like, oh, well, Holly Furfer and her husband have applied. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, A, I fell in love with your dogs immediately. And then I thought, oh, this is going to be so cool because I'm actually going to meet her. And so I was very nervous about meeting you. And I know that you were filming when I first, because you were doing your morning show when I first went in. We had to start. We start like at 8:30 in the morning. So Sean, bless his heart, had to kind of, you know, greet me. And then you came back.
And I was so nervous. I was more nervous than you. I remember pulling up in my car and saying, breathe, Holly, just take 3 deep breaths. You can do this. And I walked in and like, you know how you get kind of like jello-y knees? And I was like dry mouth. And I'm like, hi. Like my voice just went like 7 octaves higher. And I was like, so nice to meet you. And I was like, what is going on with you? Get a grip.
Oh my God.
It was so funny. And then we turned out to be, I just remember, I was like, God, I really like her. Gosh, we could be friends. Gosh, I want to be her friend. And then from there on, we just clicked. And then our husbands met. And not only did they click, but they have a bromance. I think like my husband doesn't have a lot of friends. Like he's got very, like I have a lot of great, good friends, but I have a very few really good besties like you, but he just has those besties. And like, he probably has like 5 friends that he really likes and Van's one of them. So.
Well, the feeling's mutual, and of course they play poker and do all of that. And of course, but the thing that we all have in common, whether we're on television or not, is the dogs. And and especially because I know that you're a huge bully breed lover. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, we did our show when in 2007, 2008? When was it? 2008?
It had to have been 7, around there. 7, 8. I think you're right, because we got married in 2006 and we got her about a year after we got married. So, yeah.
Okay. So sadly, they're no longer with us. They lived great lives.
Long lives.
The work we did was fabulous. They lived great lives. And I have to say, you know, Cashmere was, it was Cashmere with a K, but oh my gosh, she had the softest fur I have ever, ever felt on any dog.
She felt like a bunny. And didn't she?
Yeah, she did. She was like a bunny. And you know what made me laugh was that for people, you got to watch the Monstrous Mutts episode, but Holly had 2 of everything. It, when it came to the sitting room and entertaining, she had the rug that was chewed, that Cashmere had chewed. She had the like the ottomans that Cashmere had chewed and other stuff. And when people came over, like she was entertaining or something, those chewed items would go down into the basement and then she would bring identical unchewed items back. And then when everybody left, she would like swap again. I mean, I have to say it worked. You were managing the situation pretty well, but that was a lot of going up and down those basement stairs.
Well, I could tell you that when I would go to places and I'd be like, oh, I really like this rug. And they would be like, oh, I'll be like, I'll take 2. They're like, I'm like, oh, these ottomans are perfect for our chairs. I'll take 4. And they were like, what's going on? I'm like, long story. So yes. So everyone else enjoyed in the industry enjoyed me as well because they made money off of me.
Yeah, they did. But oh my gosh, it was such a pleasure. And as I said, we did some great work. But now, unfortunately, Barnsley and Cashmere, they lived long, very healthy lives.
Barnsley was 16 and Cashmere was 14.
And I have to say, healthy until they were both diagnosed at different times with cancer. But my goodness, you just looked after them so well that they lived. How long did Cashmere live after she was diagnosed?
5.5 years. So she was diagnosed with cancer and they said they gave us about a year and a half, about 18 months with her. And they said, we can try chemo. And we went back and forth. What I learned is that dogs don't react like humans to chemo. Only like 10% have those negative side effects. So it didn't really affect her at all. It was just, you know, going to the vet. But we had to go to the vet in the beginning a couple times a week. And then it became once a week, then once every other week. And then, but it helped. And she went into remission and actually for a couple of years. And after about year 3, 2.5, where they said, okay, maybe year 3, she had relapsed and the cancer came back. So we tried Palladian, which was an at-home chemo. It was every day, twice a day. And she lived another 3 years or so, 2.5 years. So she basically lived 5 years, almost six, exceeding expectation. We changed her diet. I made her food, homemade food every day. Like if we were in an apocalypse, you could raid my refrigerator. We could all live off of her food. It was, she got lean pork, lentils and or rice, mixed veggies, which was usually zucchini, squash, and like a red or orange pepper. And what else did she get? Oh, that was it. And then I put in turmeric and which is the anti-inflammatory. Actually, it was curcumin, which is the anti-inflammatory property and turmeric. She got turkey tail mushroom, which is anti-inflammatory, fish oil, vitamin. I mean, we did whatever we had to, and it worked. It was a lot of work, but she lived a long, healthy life. And then boom, her liver got her.
Gosh.
So it was work. And then Barnsley was diagnosed. I'll never forget April, 2020. She died in July, 2020, April, 2020. He was diagnosed and he lived until October 21st. And they gave us 6 to 8 months with him. We did the chemo. Now we're fortunate enough to be able to afford to do it. It is not inexpensive, but we don't have children. Our dogs are our children, and we actually like dogs better than people. So we were like, whatever it takes. So we were very blessed.
Yeah. And you know, they had such incredible care, and I loved it. It was coming to your house was always Kashmir and Barnsley, and it was lovely. But now coming to your house is Artemis. Oh, well, she is some sassy. I mean, she
Here we
is
go.
Divine.
And there we go. There she is.
Gosh, for those of you listening on the podcast, she is the most beautiful dog. She's tan and white, sort of tanny gray blue. What is the official description?
She's called fawn. I guess she's a fawn color, and she's got light green brown eyes. It depends on her mood. They change. We did the DNA test, and if they're true, she's full pit. Which we said we only want pits because they're a misunderstood breed and they are the sweetest breeds ever. She's 36% Staffordshire Terrier,
yeah.
32% American Pit Bull Terrier, and then the rest of her is German Shepherd, which we do not understand. But
I cannot see the German Shepherd in there, but yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe somebody got crossbreeded in there. I don't know. But she's about 60 pounds. She's smaller than we thought. Kashmir was quite the big bully pit. She was about 70, 75 pounds. So we thought she was going to be like that, but she's smaller, but she is sturdy and muscle. Her ears, like, honestly, I think she's talking to other planets. They stick up so much. And like, she talks with her ears, like her expressions with her ears are remarkable. You know, her mood by where her ears are. They're fantastic. One sticks straight up, the other one flops down, and she moves them around like eyebrows.
What was it like raising a puppy again after so long? Because you've lived with adult and then senior dogs. What was it like having a puppy in the house?
Beautifully challenging, excitingly disastrous. Now, I don't know if people are going to be able to see any of this, but I do have visual aids, which I will describe in detail. And this is from yesterday. So first of all, let me back up and say she was so cute. We got her from a place called Bosley's Place, and they rescue neonatal puppies. Her mom was a pit bull. We know this because we were really set on adopting a pit puppy. Her mom had been hit by a car with 6 puppies, and she was found on the side of the road. 2 puppies had already died. 4 made it. They took mama. 1 rescue took her. She was vetted. She was fine. She was adopted out. She's a beautiful dog. And then 1 rescue took 2 puppies. Bosley's Place took 2 puppies, her and her sister. Unfortunately, one of the other puppies died. So Bosley's got the 3 puppies, and they're amazing. This woman, Jennifer Siegel, runs this, rescue. And I've thought about fostering puppies. It's a lot of work, but I mean, feed them every hour while they're hours old. And then it's once a week. And then I'm sorry, once a week, once an hour, once every 2 hours, 3 hours, far as so you keep adding. And so we were able to watch her because Jennifer has a wonderful Instagram and Facebook page, Bosley's Place in Atlanta. And we were able to watch her grow up, and we see videos of her. And we kind of had our eye on her because we knew her mom was a pit because they had posted a picture of her mom. And we said, we're going to get her if we can. And we brought her home we adopted her officially at week 8. And then we brought her home week 9. She was the cutest little tiniest little being. I mean, you know, puppy breath and everything, but boy, was she a pee machine. And I forget about that. Now, Barnsley was older. He was October 21 when he passed, but for the better part of the last year of his life, he was incontinent. So I had puppy pads everywhere, diapers, things like that. I'd finally cleaned all that up and forgot, oh, we have a puppy. The difference is, you know, you have a puppy and they're going to grow out of this. So you kind of stick with it, but man, you had to catch her and we had to see the signs. She definitely had a look in her eyes when she needed to pee. And we just watched her 24/7. She was probably the most watched puppy ever, but she peed all over the house. And we have now new carpets. And she was great. She crated. She was great crating. Of course, now she sleeps on her bed. But the biggest challenge, again, is the chewing. She also is a puppy, all puppy energy and excitement and a lot of naughtiness. But, you know, she's a puppy. You have to understand, like, she's a baby. So we are dealing right now with the chewing. She is just over a year and she's still chewing. And I think, how long do they chew for?
Well, they can for quite a long time.
Oh, great.
Because, you know, they lose their puppy teeth. And mm-hmm. then as those adult teeth set into the jaw, it's that sort of second phase of chewing. But interestingly, we see that, you know, there's almost like a third phase of chewing when the dog reaches about a year old or 18 months old.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. And some dogs, you know, for them, it's just the chewing is just pleasurable. As long as it's not linked to a medical condition, they just like chewing. And so some dogs never grow out of it.
Yeah, we do BarkBox and we get toys, and it's basically just to give her something to tear up. Like the toy doesn't get played with, it just gets chewed. She has gone through, you know, indestructible Kongs. Those don't last. They take longer to chew up. So we do bully sticks, non-rawhides, you know, it's just constant chewing. So she knows, though. She knows right and wrong. We're teaching her. But, you know, sometimes she can't help herself. Impulse control. I understand that. I like red wine every once in a while, even when I'm not supposed to. It's impulse control. So I can relate. But like, for instance, the other day, I'm going to show a visual. I had this little coffee table book I got at my book club, White Elephant, and it was so cute. But now... It's a little bit, I mean, you can still sort of read it, but...
she had a good time with that, Holly.
She did. And I caught her. I could hear her. So I always make sure that if I don't see her or can't hear her, she, like, something's wrong. She's still, even though she's a year old, I've learned my lesson. But here's the deal. This is the frustrating thing. So she loves to chew anything. We have finished our basement during the pandemic and we have this lovely big TV and there are remote controls. Now, she loves a good remote control. If you leave it on the couch, fair game. I understand that. She sits on the couch and she goes, oh, what's this? She can't distinguish. But we were able to leave it on the side table or on the coffee table because she knows that's where people put their things and she's not allowed until last night. I would like you to know that this is last night, the seventh remote that she has chewed through. These are not cheap. Seventh remote. Needless to say, I found a lot on Apple Plus because I was watching a show. It ended and I couldn't turn the TV off. So I just had to keep watching all those previews. There's quite a few good shows on there, by the way, if you're interested and need something else to watch. Because I sat there for 30 minutes not knowing what to do. I finally had to unplug the TV. Because I couldn't
it's
get
decimated. It is absolutely decimated.
Now, I will tell you, this is even the battery. Now, this is actually catching her within the first minute of getting it. This, I actually got up, put it on the end table, went to the restroom, came back. Literally 60 seconds.
Wow.
This one is in fairly good shape compared to the others, which we couldn't even identify that it was a remote afterwards. So I channeled my inner Victoria, and after I let her know, like, no, she knew right away. She looked at me and hung her head and gave me that cute, like, but I'm so sweet and cute. You can't get mad at me. No, I was mad. So I now have a wooden box that, hear that? A wooden box now that the remotes are going to go in or anything's going to go in. And if she can open this, now we got problems and we're going on a TV show to win $1 million. But... this is now what we're going to do with the remotes. So I just make do. But
that is a chunky wooden box.
It's like an old cigar box and it's thick and it's solid. It's got hinges. There's no way she can get in, I don't think.
Wow. You are truly managing the situation, Holly. Or you're like trying to prevent the behavior by adding something that is going to stop her from doing that. Why do you think she's such a chewer?
I don't know. And let me add that she hasn't done this as much anymore because I've gone so mad. Windowsills, stairs, carpeting, just like cashmere, chewing everything. Now, what I learned from you when we did It's Mir the Dog, she was bored. So yes. I take her on walks every day and I take her to a very safe dog park here to run and play. I make sure every day she gets exercise or some kind of stimulation every single day. If it's raining and we can't go outside, we play games in the house. We run in the house. I have those busy things for her. She's got dog friends that we do play dates. I've taken her to doggy daycare so she can run around. She's just a puppy that with energy and needs attention. She needs to be doing something. So that's what I think. But I will defer to you as the expert, because there are times when I take her for a long walk in the morning, and which I did yesterday, and I got this last night, which is a remote in pieces.
You know, you're experiencing what's just normal. And we say, oh, the dog's chewing, or the dog's got this kind of behavior, and it's because of this. Well, dogs do doggy things. And one of those doggy things is chewing. And mm-hmm. that's just what is. And so you're doing, and I know that you're doing this because I see your Instagram, or I hear, oh, I'm going to the dog park. You want to come? Or, you know, you are a very diligent dog guardian, that you are really giving her great enrichment. But at the end of the day, she's still a young dog. She's an adolescent dog now. She's moving into adulthood, but this is her thing. And so all you can really do right now is supervision and provide her with the outlets for chewing that she needs. As long as the chewing is not related to some kind of discomfort, some kind of mouth discomfort, which I know you've checked out, that she's medically fit. It's just what some dogs do. And it's really difficult to manage, but manage you have to.
I've realized it. And this is how you really know that a dog is a life commitment. It's not just, okay, we'll get a dog and we'll make sure it's safe and healthy, because my life revolves around this dog. I plan my life around this dog. Oh, do you want to go? Nope. I got to take my dog to the dog park. Oh, do you want to have lunch? Nope. I walk my dog that time of the day. It truly is, you know, okay. Hey, can you bring Fenway? That's her dog boyfriend, who's a golden retriever, who is the sweetest dog, but also same age, very hyper. Can you bring him on Wednesday? Because I have a meeting in the afternoon, so I want to tire her out in the morning. Like, your life revolves around the dog's schedule, which is crazy as a commitment, but, you know, otherwise you see the death and destruction that follows.
Yeah. And, you know, they're a part of our family. So of course it's like, I mean, it's, and again, so before people jump down my throat, it is like having a child where you're on a certain schedule, especially when a kid is younger. You have them on a certain schedule, and you know, you can't just say, oh, I'm not going to pick the kid up from school, or I'm not going to do this because I want to go out with my friends. You can't do it. And it's the same with a dog. If you are going to, as you said, make that commitment, you got to follow through. And unfortunately, it can be, for some dogs, it can be a lot of work. And so thankfully you're up for the challenge, but many people aren't. And I don't blame them.
It's hard. It really is hard. I have a question for you. How do you know if it is a medical issue versus just I'm bored, or an impulse control issue?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when we're talking about, let's just talk about impulse control. Impulse control is kind of like a funny idea that we're trying to teach our dogs impulse control, which we try and do that. But are we teaching them so that we tell them no? So we are saying, we're trying to build up impulse control and control their impulses through us, or are we working to build their own self-control? Because we can direct and control those impulses as much as we can when we're there. When we're not there, then we have to manage the dog. But really, we should be focusing on how the dog can itself build self-control.
How do you do that?
Well, it can be really hard. You have to find out what your dog really, you know, why is your dog chewing? And one of the first thing you look at are medical issues. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in the mouth that is causing the dog to chew? Is there unrelated pain somewhere else in the body could be related, could be unrelated, that's causing the dog to chew. And your vet will tell you that. So whenever I have an issue that, I mean, we know with puppies chew, but I always like to be very thorough. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think it's very important that you have a great relationship with your vet, and also that trainers that you're working with also have very good relationships with their vets, because I really don't take a dog case on until I know that that dog has got a clean bill of health. And that means taking bloods and doing all kinds of things so that I know that I am working with a dog that, yep, is physically fit and that is not causing. So, for example, if there were mouth ulcers, invariably there's, you know, with the younger dogs, they're not. But broken teeth sometimes when people give their dogs antlers. I know you don't do that, but if the dog breaks it, there could be some kind of mouth pain. If we can, and of course I'm not a vet, so there's a whole load of other things that contribute to chewing. But if when I've got a clean bill of health and everything is fine, then I know that this is more of a behavioral issue. And how extreme is it? Is the dog chewing because she's anxious? No. A lot of dogs will just chew because they like it, because it feels good, because it's exploration. You know, when puppies are young, they explore the world through their mouths. Mm-hmm. It's exactly like human babies. When they start to really explore, they pick things up and put them in their mouths.
How That's curious.
Why we it's cannot so be, we cannot leave babies to themselves, because they're going to ingest something and they're going to choke and they're going to die, right? So it's the same with puppies. Mm-hmm. They explore the world through their mouths. They like to taste. They like to touch. And you will find also that dogs have preferences to what they want to chew. So some dogs will like to chew on plastic. Others will like to chew on rubber. Some will like to chew on wood. So, and some like to chew blankets and soft things. Now, as I understand, Artemis, she likes to chew, but she doesn't swallow anything. She spits it out, doesn't she?
Yeah, she chews everything. So, for instance, she got one of my husband's gym shoes, which is really cool when she ripped it apart to see what's on the inside. There's so many cool layers to it. But there's like foam, and then there's fabric, and there's all kinds of things. And she does that. She'll put it in between her paws, and she'll take a piece and then spit it to the side, and then chew off another piece, and then spit. She never swallows anything. She just wants to... It's almost even not chewing at it, but ripping it apart.
Yeah. And that she's just doing what dogs are very good at doing. I mean, if you think about it, we have these dogs in our homes. They are confined, okay? And because they spend a lot of their lives being confined, we have difficulty in trying to give them natural enrichment. And so enrichment is that. It's trying to find ways that we can enrich our dogs' lives. What they might naturally do in the wild, how can we provide that to our dogs in their homes? So, and confinement can cause a lot of issues, and there's boredom, and you know, kids get bored too. So it's, and because I think Artemis is a very busy dog, that she just, this is her activity. This is what she likes to do. And ripping things apart is a dog thing to do. It's what dogs do when they find a carcass to eat. It's what dogs do. Now, that doesn't mean to say that if your dog rips things apart, it's going to do that to a small fluffy thing. It's not. Some might, most of them won't.
She does.
But the fact is she really loves doing it.
Yeah. She likes to destroy things. We could open a stuffing factory here. I said, I actually, believe it or not, keep all the stuffing, and I walk a lot. And sometimes, like, you know, in between, like, especially in the summer, I actually use that stuffing in my shoes to make it, my shoes more comfortable when I walk. So if anybody should need stuffing, let me know. We have tons. But yeah. You know what I also find too, that she's very, she's very curious about some things, but she's a little more meek. Whereas some dogs will, oh, what's this? What's this? She'll walk with me outside. She's a great walker, which is amazing. She loves to just walk, and her ears are up, and she's sniffing the air, and then she'll sniff the ground. But she's not one of these nose to the ground, sniffs everything. She's very alert, and she's watching things. And if she gets a really strong scent of something, she'll sniff. Where with my other dog, especially the hound, it took an hour to walk my block because he was sniffing everything. She'll walk, 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 walk. She wants the exercise and she wants to see what's going on around her. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it as well, that sort of mental stimulation.
Yeah, I think bully breeds tend to be less sniffers. I mean, they still got great sniffers on them, but they tend to be more either air centers or they are just, you know, they're vigilant of their surroundings. And that can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing, depending on how the dog responds to the environment. But yeah, I mean, she's curious. And I know that it did take you a while for her to get comfortable on the lead, comfortable going out. And now she is. But I think she's quite a cautious dog. I think she's quite careful. But then when she feels comfortable, it's like, you know, oh, I can chew, I can play, I can do. And so that's another thing, is that she is very comfortable in your house. And I think with her, this is not like, oh my gosh, this is a behavior where she's fearful, or she's anxious, and that's why she's chewing. No, no, no. She's a young dog and she likes chewing.
So will she get out of this chewing thing?
I hope so. I think so. I think you have just got to, A, prevent it by doing what you're doing, management, but also still providing her with outlets to be able to do what she really likes to do on appropriate things. And I think it will. I think the more it's all about, you know, we can replace the thing and the behavior we don't like with other behaviors and other experience. We can, but dogs will sometimes default to the thing that they love doing best. And I do find, though, with dogs when they become adults and they do come down a little bit, I do find that they do chew less. I think it's a sort of similar thing with Kashmir. I think it would just become less over time. I know we did some work with her, but yeah, we don't want to tell her off unless we catch her in the act and we can say, hey, no, ma'am, which of course you can say that. But I mean, you know, I know you don't severely punish her either, because we want her to express herself by chewing. But yeah, it is a problematic behavior, and you are not alone. Okay, we're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, I want to talk about what it's like to have a bully breed in this day and age. Okay, we'll be right back. It's my favorite weekend of the year. Okay, maybe after Thanksgiving and my daughter's birthday. But it really is something I look forward to all year long, the Dog Behavior Conference. It seems like I say this every year, but it really is true. The 2024 lineup of Dog Behavior Conference speakers has me as fired up as I've ever been for what I truly believe is the most meaningful, enlightening, impactful and inspirational event available to dog geeks like you and me anywhere in the dog world. With speakers including returning favorites like Sarah Fisher, Mike Shikashio, Arik Bloom, Andrew Hale and Sarah Heath, to newcomers like Robert Hewings, Marty and Mikhail Becker, Lisa and Brad Wagner and more, the range of topics covered is custom tailored to serve you no matter where you are on your dog journey. A wide-eyed newbie figuring things out for the first time, or a longtime professional trainer or shelter rescue worker looking to fine-tune your skills and knowledge. It seems like everywhere you turn now since COVID, someone is offering yet another online event, course, or conference, promising the latest and greatest in dog training knowledge. But we've been doing this for over a decade, including in-person dog behavior conferences since 2010, to accompany our longtime Victoria Stillwell Academy and Positively.com courses for guardians and pet pros alike. So go to dogbehaviorconference.com now to check out the DBC and secure your seat today. Registration is open and available to you wherever you are in the world. The live event happens from April the 19th to the 21st, but you'll automatically get access to all of the recordings from the conference for 12 months. So it's okay if you can't join us live for some or all of the weekend. The DBC is special, and I'd hate for you to miss it. So visit dogbehaviorconference.com now to get your ticket. That's dogbehaviorconference.com. And now, back to the podcast. I'm back with Holly Fervor, and we're talking everything puppy. She has just gone through the puppy months and now is experiencing adolescence. Got through it. Well done. So before we talk about what it's like to have a bully breed in this day and age, you had mentioned as well in previous conversations that we've had about, and I've actually witnessed this as well, is that she's very vocal and can be quite demanding.
She's spoiled. yes. And that's the thing that for us, and I 100% take responsibility for this. We've done this to her, I realize. The funny thing is, the good thing is, I'm not a big barker, dogs that bark. When she's at the dog park, bark away. That's fine. She's excited. I feel like it's okay. You might tell me that's not okay, but she'll bark to get other dogs to play with her or get their attention. But in the house, when we're in the kitchen, for instance, she gets carrots. That's her little treat, little baby carrots. And when we're going into the refrigerator, she'll march right in there and sit down. And if you don't give her a carrot, she will bark at you. Now I have, it works because the barking, she'll bark and then bark again and to get your attention. And then you just lose your mind and like, here's a carrot. And she goes, okay, I got what I needed. We've started to not reward that behavior. She talks a lot. She's very vocal. She sounds like a tauntaun, which I've now learned is a thing from Star Wars. Look it up. She sounds just like it. But she's vocalizing now because she knows she's not supposed to bark. I don't like when she barks, but she still has that demanding. Now she's getting to the point where she will lunge at me and grab at my clothes or nip at me, not to hurt me, but to get my attention, to get what she wants. So I fear that she's an only child and that only dog, see already, and that we've done this by creating this sort of like giving her what she wants because, oh my God, she's a puppy. We love her. Oh yes. We want you to be happy here. We love you so much. And now she's become the devil dog at times. So help on that, please.
And she has, you have reinforced that behavior beautifully. She's trained you well. barking is such a huge problem for people. And it's understandable why that is, because we all know dogs bark. That's what they were bred to do. Humans made dogs bark. We bred that trait into them, right? Wolves, and we know obviously that dogs haven't been wolves for thousands of years, but wolves do not bark. Wolf cubs don't bark. They make a noise, but they don't bark. And adult wolves do not bark.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Barking for humans was a really important trait. So when that relationship started between wolf and human, and then, humans spread wolves for the things that they needed these wolf/dogs to do, and gradually over hundreds and hundreds of years, they were able to selectively breed dogs for certain things that they wanted the dog to do. One of those things was barking, because they realized that actually having a dog bark, well, it's the world's first alarm system. And as well as I say that the dogs were the world's first sort of human trash collectors, because they ate the trash, they were also great alarm barkers. And this was perfect to protect settlements, to protect homes, to protect livestock, to protect fields, to protect areas, territorial boundaries. And so our dogs were then that trait was selectively bred. So there's more dogs now. There's the puppies of that dog that's such a great barker. They also bark. And we encourage that as well. And then, of course, barking can sometimes be great for hunting, especially when you've got a terrier going into ground. If a terrier is in a tunnel, hunting whatever you want that terrier to hunt, I do not agree with hunting, but whatever you want that terrier to hunt, and you can hear that dog bark, you can dig down to where that dog is and get your prey. So it was an important trait for us that has been bred over centuries now, and now we have dogs that bark. In fact, it's kind of not usual if you have a dog that doesn't bark. So barking is an essential method of communication for many dogs. And some dogs are just more vocal than others. And Artemis is one of those. She expresses herself through vocalizations, grumblings and little noises and barking. And I've seen the demand barking. I want it. And, you know, and some people would say to me, but dogs, they don't demand things like that. They're just, you know, they're barking because they're needy. Or I think she is a little bit needy, but they can demand stuff. And I'll tell you that, I mean, I've experienced it myself with our Bella, who passed away a few days ago. She, as she got older, she didn't do this when she was, I mean, we got home when she was 11 years old. She didn't do this when she first came to us. But in the last 6 months of her life, because she went blind, she would smell food when we were cooking and immediately wake up and start barking. And then she would come into the kitchen and bark. She was basically saying, feed me. And so what do you do with a senior dog that, yeah, is very, very old? And we fed her. We're like, okay, got you.
Yep. Yeah.
We got you. I mean, okay. Because it wasn't an issue for us, because we knew that this dog, she's so old, she doesn't really know what she's doing, but she does know one thing. She smells something and she wants a piece of it. But that's not what I would tell other people to do.
Especially a puppy.
A puppy, because then you are reinforcing that behavior that you don't want. So how do you get her not to bark? How do you get her not to talk? How do you get her not to communicate? It's really hard. And first of all, you don't reinforce that behavior. You reinforce quiet. So, for example, if she is barking, just get on with what you're doing. Wait for quiet. And then she can have what maybe she wants. If you are ready to give it to her. The other thing that I do is that I change up the environment where the dog is. So, for example, if I'm in the kitchen and I've opened the fridge and she barks, I will literally shut the fridge. If she does not stop barking, we will go off and do something in a different room. I'll just change the picture. I'll change the environment, or we'll go outside and have, you know, you can go outside for a little bit and explore by yourself. So I just change that situation up. Now, the other thing is that what I've done with my Chihuahua, when she barks at the door, and she does, I like her to bark at the door. I like that alarm. Hey, somebody's coming, because again, that's what dogs are very good at doing. And then I tell her, thank you. And when I tell her, thank you, she should in theory, and sometimes she does, sometimes she doesn't, stop the barking, because I'm taking over. We're all right. Thank you so much. We're done. But that's different. That's like a warning bark. Mm-hmm. Artemis is demand barking. And so the less reinforcement she gets for demand barking, the better. But it's difficult, because you want to be able to give her what she needs, and you don't want her to get really anxious, the fact that she's communicating and you're just ignoring her. But any type of potential interaction might be what she wants and what she gets and what she's been barking for. So could you be reinforcing it? I think if you really boil it down, it's you going to the fridge and getting something out of the fridge where she starts barking because she knows a carrot's coming. She does not get a carrot when you're going to the fridge. And that means that I will take some carrots out in the beginning of the day and I will put them in different places. And when I'm ready to give her a carrot, she'll get a carrot from other places and not the fridge.
Oh, that's genius.
But different places.
Yeah.
Not just like on the countertop. You see what I mean?
Yeah, like so in my office when she's sitting here, because oftentimes too, she'll come over for attention.
Yeah.
So that's a good idea. Like, you know, hey, when I go to the bathroom, maybe she gets a carrot when I come out of the bathroom if she sat nicely and waited.
Yeah. And you change it up all the time so she never knows.
Oh, okay.
And that means that, you know, carrot might come at some point, but it's never, ever going to come when I'm demanding it. And it's also never going to come when I go into the fridge.
That's a great idea. She does it for attention too. And I know she just, you know, as an only dog, I've never just had one dog. I've always had two dogs or a dog and a couple cats, so that there's other animal playmates. So when she's bored or she wants attention, she comes to me. And if I don't give it to her, that's when she starts doing the growling thing and she'll pull at my clothing.
Yeah, she wants to play. She wants attention and she wants you to play with her.
So what do you do in that situation where it's not something like, I'm hungry, I want a carrot or I want a snack. Now it's, I want your attention because I want her to have interaction. I don't want her to be bored and go off and choose something because I'm not paying attention to her, but I don't want to reinforce her. I want attention now. Okay, you get what you want right away, like a child.
Yeah. So this is, again, where it's almost like you have to pre-plan. Sometimes dealing with a behavior in the situation, the behavior is just a symptom of how the dog feels, right? So by actually addressing that symptom, you're not getting to the root of it. If you actually don't really focus on the symptom, but you focus on the root, then the symptom's not going to happen. So if she is fulfilled in other areas of her life and has had a lot of mental stimulation and physical enrichment, and then she's not going to feel the need to like, hey, mom, I need you to play. Hey. And then she starts to get a little adolescent about it and starts to become a bit grabby. What do you do when she does get a bit grabby? Is you have to give feedback. No, ma'am, that's not okay. And if it does mean she has to go out for a little bit outside and calm down a little bit, or you take yourself into another room for a little bit, it's not like bad, bad girl. And you slam off into the other room, slam the door. No, it's not. I can't do that right now. And I'm now going in here. You're going to have a little calm down with some enrichment. You need to look after yourself for a bit because I got this to do. So that's how I deal with it. But here's the other thing, and I know that I'm talking a lot, but if you say, hey, no, ma'am, and she's like, well, yeah, and she keeps on coming back at you, that's the time when you go, okay, we're done. We're going to just have a little bit of separation, a little bit of like, and that's a very effective way of dealing with it.
That's great. Because
I just think when you're like shouting at a dog, or I don't know, but when you get annoyed or anything, it just sort of like they're getting a reaction.
I actually, I tried something that does seem to work a little bit till she figures me out because it's a new response from me, but I fake cry when she's nipping at me or pulling at me. And then I'll just sort of wither and cry because she's very sensitive. Mm-hmm. And then she'll go, what? She backs off with this look on her face. Like, what's happening? What did I do? And then I'll stop crying and say, are we good now? It just calms her down. It gives her a second to say, oh my God. Cause sometimes she'll, she gets a little, wants to play and she's ramping herself up and it stops her in her tracks. Now she's going to figure out pretty fast because she's a bully pit or, she's a bully breed. She's a smart dog.
Yep.
That, this is just me making that up. But for now, while she's still gullible, I'm doing that. That does seem to distract her a little bit. It sort of knocks her off her game.
Yeah, as in, oh, I don't like this response from mom. That's not what I was kind of, because she's very connected with you. I mean, some dogs would be like, oh, I don't really care. I want what I want and I want, but she is a sensitive soul. The other thing that I would do is I would also teach her different ways of getting attention. So I like doing the touch cue, that if a dog needs me, then it comes up and touches my leg or with its nose or touches my hand. And it's just a way, the mouth is closed, so there's no barking behavior and there's no nipping behavior. And actually it's successful and works. So I teach them how to do the skill and then we begin to transfer the skill so that they then start to realize that if they need me, they can just come and touch me.
She does that. I notice that she'll start doing that. If I'm in the middle of something, she'll come over and put her paw on me, or she'll push me, or she'll nudge me. And then she starts with the vocalization, the little, and then it does. It escalates to the barking if I'm not responding. Oftentimes I work from my house now. So oftentimes I'm on a call and I can't do anything, but I've gotten really good about either trying to exercise her before I know I'm not going to be able to attend to her, or I give her like something to chew on appropriate, like a non-rawhide, or something. I give her a toy just so she can pull apart and, destroy while I'm on the call. So.
And it is exhausting. I mean, when you are raising a young dog, exactly like a young child, it's exhausting. And it is, it's just, but what you're doing is you're utilizing good parenting. And
it's a lot.
It's tough.
It's a lot. And I feel for people who have new puppies and are frustrated, because I remember what it's like having a 2-month-old, a 3-month-old, a 4-month. Like there's just each month is a different challenge. And like I said, when I got my puppy Barnsley for the first time, we had a 9-year-old dog already in the house who kind of helped, you know, him like in his way. He wasn't as needy because we had 2 cats and another dog at the time. And then when I got Cashmere, she was about 4 months and Barnsley was about 6 months. So they had each other and I didn't really have to go through this. So I get it and I feel bad, but I feel like we're getting on the other side of this. And now, I mean, I enjoy her so much. She's so funny. She makes me laugh every day. And for people who just have new puppies, hang in there. It's worth it. They're so great. Cause the peeing has stopped. We put a dog door in. She now, first of all, I never thought she was going to use the dog door. I went through the dog door more than she did in the beginning. Like I was like 30 times in and out, look, follow me. And she just looked at me. I think she was internally laughing and she thought, how long can I let her do this before she realizes I know what she's doing and I know what she wants. But what I did was I brought her dog friend over who did use a dog door and he taught her how to use it, because once she wanted to go play with him and he went outside, then it was like, either you open the door, I'm not opening the door for you. She figured it out real fast. Oh, she's outside and it's starting to rain. She doesn't like the rain. I now know how to go in. And it took her literally one time in and out to realize, okay, this is what I do. Best thing I ever did.
Again, but she's a cautious dog. She looks, she observes. I mean, I love it because she is. She watches, she takes it in, she observes, she does.
Is that a bully breed? I want to talk more about bully breeds.
Not necessarily, I'd say, okay. Because bullies tend to sort of just kind of like act first and think later. She's a little different, where she's got more of that German Shepherd in her. So maybe she is part German Shepherd, where she sort of just, she analyzes and then does. She is really interesting. Now, I do want to ask this question because, you know, in the UK right now, we are having a lot of discrimination against certainly XL bullies, and it is devastating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In America, and certainly where we live down in Atlanta, there's no restrictions, thank goodness. No. Have you encountered any difficulties with having a pit bull?
Not really. I will say though, I think, and I don't know if this is true still or not, but in our homeowner's insurance, we had to let them know if we had a certain breed because it would be more expensive, which I thought was quite ridiculous because, as you know, I had a bully pit and a black and tan coonhound at the same time. I would trust my bully pit with anybody and anything. I would not trust my black and tan coonhound at all. Not one iota. When people came over, even if they'd been, you know, I kept an eye on him. I kept him away from things. He was more reactive and dangerous and scary to me just because of his personality. What I did when she was really little is I wanted her to, and this is also, I guess, maybe a good tip for people who have puppies. I wanted to expose her to as much as I could so that she was friendly. So I took her on car rides because my other dogs would go nuts in the car because they never were taught as puppies to go in the car. She is great in the car. I tried to desensitize her to everything. My nephew plays Little League. I would take her to the Little League game. So she got, you know, used to listening to the explosion of cheers and the baseball bat and the screaming and the kids there and people, oh, can I pet your puppy? Yes, of course. You know, within reason, I made sure she was comfortable. But it was good for her to be able to expose. It took a minute. You know, we were very cautious with her. She wasn't sure. She didn't like to walk on a lead at first. And then she looked around and she was a little bit. And I would tell people, yep, one at a time, you know, come up and here's how we do it. And then she got to the point where she loved it. She was desensitized to that all. But I also did it because people would say, oh, my God, she's so cute. As a three-month-old puppy is so cute. And if you look at most puppies, they kind of all look alike in some ways. Mm-hmm. They all have the same shape head and, you know, little body. And until they grow older, like people, you know, babies, you know, we have just different features, but a baby looks like a baby, right? And so everyone would say, oh, she's so cute. What kind of a dog is she? And I would say pit bull. And the looks on their faces would utter shock. How could this dog be so cute and be a dangerous pit bull? And I think it was like, oh, and I said, yeah, sweetest dog I've ever had. She's so sweet. And as people, they don't know. It's what you read and it's what you hear. And they've oftentimes not had exposure to a pit bull. So when she was tiny puppy and so cute, I would tell everybody, she's a pit bull. She's a pit bull. She's a pit bull. Till people realized, oh my gosh, they're so sweet. Then I take her to this dog park, Fetch, which is a very great, safe dog park. Just so you know, it's not a public dog park. It's a private dog park where you pay a fee. You have to be vetted. They have people who monitor. So I'm very careful about that. But there's all kinds of dogs there. Anything from, you know, a doodle to a golden retriever to a shepherd to huskies and pit bulls. And there are quite a few pit mixes because there's a lot of rescues. And she is one of the sweetest, most playful dogs. And when people look at me and they say, is she a pit? I say, yes, because she's now looks more like a pit bull. She doesn't look like the big, scary American pit bull that, you know, people have demonized, but she does definitely has the pit bull face. And when they see her playing and they see how sweet she is, they go, oh my gosh, this is great. So I think it helps to demystify that and debunk those myths and rumors. But I have been in places where I'm walking her, you know, even on my street and someone has a baby and they, oh, you know, that's a pit bull. That's a, you know, that's a dog. That's a scary dog. Be careful. Now she's cute and she's got floppy ears and she's not huge and menacing looking. She, and sometimes people don't know what she is. So it's not as bad, but you can definitely see people have those preconceived notions. And once I say, oh, she's great. The only issue is she has a problem with her liquor. Then they laugh because she likes to lick because she's, you know, very verbal, I guess, or, you know, with her mouth, she likes to lick everything. And then they realize, okay, she's not so bad, which is why you and I've talked about this many times. It's maddening because I've been bitten when growing up. I had two pretty serious bites when I was younger. One was a schnauzer and one was a poodle.
Yeah.
Never in my life have I ever gotten bitten by any kind of bully breed whatsoever. I've been nipped at by Chihuahuas. I've been nipped at by a golden retriever. And like I said, two serious bites when I was younger, but never a pit bull.
Yeah, I have to say the same thing for me. And as a trainer here in the South, we work a lot of our work and also doing rescue work as well. And all the rescue work that we do in breaking up dogfighting rings and stuff like that is that I come in contact with a lot of pit bull type dogs. And I've never, ever, ever been bitten by one, ever. I've been bitten by some other dogs, but never them. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. And I think it's interesting to kind of get your take and about how you've had to, because of her breed, how you've had to kind of manage people. And so by telling them, and that's education. And she's a great ambassador, I think, as well. She's just a great ambassador for that breed type. So I would just say, you know, continue the work you're doing, because we need dogs like her. And of course, that look, any dog that you take that you don't raise properly, that you don't expose like you have been doing, that you don't socialize, that it's going to be compromised. And because bully breed types, you know, they are very smart, very emotional dogs. A lot of them get so abused. I mean, it's no wonder that sometimes they say, yeah, no, not having it. And it truly is a people problem. But yet again, unfortunately, with some dreadful circumstances and situations and incidences that happened in the UK, and that's devastating. But because of that, a whole breed type is demonized and now banned. So it is, I feel blessed to live in Atlanta where we do not have discrimination against certain breed types. But, you know,
I have a couple of questions for you because I've always been curious. One thing, you know, we hear about all these myths and, you know, falsities, I guess you could say, when it comes to the bully breed type, but with their jaws, mouths. I've always heard, well, you know, the pit bull has a bigger jaw and it locks harder than any other dog. And when it locks, you can't unlock it. And I find that really hard to believe. I think, well, wait a minute. German shepherds can shred somebody in 6 seconds. And some, you know, army dogs are trained for that, or police dogs are trained for that. But is that true that a pit bull has something different with its mouth, or is that a complete myth?
It is a myth. And as I understand it, the only land mammal or animal, I should say, that actually can lock its jaw is a certain type of lizard.
Oh.
I don't know what that lizard is. It's a certain type of lizard. And yes, no, they do not have jaws that lock. Are they gamey dogs? Yes. And by gamey, I mean, are they intense? If they're going to do something, they're going to do it. And so sometimes if a dog has locked on, or, you know, that's why they're so eminently trainable by these dreadful dog fighters, because they can hang from a tree, you know, by their jaws, and they're encouraged to do that, or to jump up and grab something, encouraged to hold on, that it, you can get a bully breed to stop biting, but it's because they're gamey, and they can unfortunately suffer a lot of pain that people inflict upon them. And that's why I would say, but no, anatomically, there's no way that their jaws don't lock. So yeah, myth.
Myth. And I guess maybe when you say gamey and they're very, you know, when they get something, is that why around the turn of the century, they were called nanny dogs, where people actually got pit bulls to watch their children?
They got pit bulls to watch their children, not so much as guarding from people, but actually to keep rats and mice off the child as they were sleeping.
Wow.
So they were used in Elizabethan times for that. And of course, unfortunately, then the dog fighting was really prevalent then. But yeah. So that's kind of why they are known as nanny dogs. It truly is too. Yeah, sometimes they were great companions, but yeah, a lot of the time it was to keep the vermin off the child as it slept.
Because I see a lot, you know, when you look at pictures from, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, mm-hmm. you see little kids and they have their arms around a dog and it's invariably a pit bull. Mm-hmm. And it seems, and I know that when my nephew was little in Kashmir, my bully pit, you know, I did not trust my black and tan coon hound. I mean, I don't trust any dog around a baby, but, you know, we'd be there watching. My black and tan coon hound would be on the other side of the room. He wanted nothing to do with the child because he was so wiggy, but she would follow him when he would start to crawl. She would get in front of him and block him from the stairs or the railing or the bed or anything like, and I watched her and I thought, does she have herding in her? But then I realized she was just sort of protecting him. Like she wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to get too far away. And I mean, of course, we were there the whole time. He was never in danger, but I watched this interesting behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look, again, it's every dog is different. So there are some bullies that I would trust as, like, as you said, I don't trust any dog. I don't care whether it's a chihuahua or a pit bull or whatever with small children. I just don't. Yeah. And there is people that say, and I get it, that sometimes, you know, kids should not be walking dogs until they're 14 years old. Maybe that's a little bit old, but I understand why they're saying it, right? So, but yeah, it all depends upon the dog. And I, again, you know, people that know me know that I'm very realistic because I've seen both sides, mm-hmm. seen how powerful they can be when they fight. We did broke up that massive dog fighting operation in Polk County, Georgia.
Right.
Huge, 107 fighting dogs, right?
But what if that was German Shepherds? Would it be the same thing? What if it was, you know, Golden Retrievers?
They just, again, you know, when I was saying that people have bred dogs to do certain jobs for them and built up those traits, that's exactly what's happened. That's why German Shepherds are so good at doing what they do. And their noses, their snouts, their mouths are actually much better for the job that they need to do, which a lot of it is scent detection, right? Whereas a bulldog, it's when it was used for bull baiting, it's much easier for that shorter snout to hold onto a bull's neck. So, you know, we bred dogs to everything, to the way, the shape of their ears, to the shape of their tails, to what their bodies look like, to how long their legs are, to how long their snouts are, to how sharp their teeth are. I mean, so humans have selectively bred dogs for centuries so that we can get out of them what we want. And because of that, these dogs, yes, in some ways they've been so successful, and in other ways they truly have been molded by us. And sometimes that has not been good for them. And the Bully breed is one of those dogs. And I think because they're so biddable and so smart and so quick, they are the most abused dogs because they're eminently trainable.
Mm.
Do you see what I mean? So they'll do what you ask them to do.
Well, and I will say with Artemis, our new dog, she's a rescue. So her personality, and she was bottle fed from hours old or day or two old when they got her. She is the most docile. So you're right. She's only used to, you know, being manhandled with love and kindness and warmth and protection. So that's how she is now. She's sweet and lovable. I mean, if any person sits down in my house, she immediately gets up next to you and puts her head in your lap. Mm. That's it. Bar none. Whether you want it or not, she's going to put her head. And if you say, no, get off, she goes, okay, she looks hurt. But then, you know, so I think also the fact that how she was raised, you know, I can't even envision her getting into a scuffle with anything or anybody. If we're at the dog park and there's a scuffle, which, you know, like a dog's humping a dog and then the dog gets mad, she runs the other way. She wants nothing to do with it. Like, she won't even investigate. She's like, I'm out. I'm over here.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm so glad that you rescued her. And I look forward to her growing up. I know that some of these interesting behaviors and maybe slightly frustrating behaviors will start to lessen, but she's still very young, so you have a ways to go. But I'm just really glad that you, and I know I remember when both dogs, Barnsley and Cashmere, passed away, that's what Sean and you said, we want a pit bull, and that's what we're going to get, and you have. So I just want to thank you for coming on and being very frank and truthful about what it's like to raise a puppy. I think a lot of people who are listening to this are going to go, oh, yeah, thank God it's not only me. And also get some ideas on how to deal with stuff.
Hang in there. I've got one last piece of advice. When they're about, how old is it, like 4 months, 5 months, when they start to lose their teeth?
Yes.
My advice is wear shoes around your house or slippers. I can't tell you how many times I have pierced a foot and I didn't know what this was, but we kept finding her baby teeth. I thought dogs swallowed their teeth, and I kept saying, what am I stepping on? And we have white carpet, so they would blend in. And so now either you're going to have to buy me nice jewelry to put into these piercings in my feet, or else we finally got smart. And until I saw all her baby teeth out, I wore slippers, hard bottom slippers and shoes in the house. That's my only words of advice if you have sensitive feet.
People don't talk about that a lot, but you're right. Those little things are sharp, and especially when they fall out, you step on one.
Exactly. Right. Oh, yeah. So that would be my parting words. Get slippers with hard soles.
Holly, it is just divine to have you back. And I hope that you can come back and join us again, and we can talk more dogs and then sort of check in with Artemis and see how she's doing. But you're awesome. And I mean, I know that you are so busy and you're flying around here, there and everywhere and being great on the TV still. But just I miss you doing this podcast. And I'm so glad that we had this chance to chat.
Anytime. I think we should do like a revival. Let's do one podcast where we just do quizzes and advice.
Yes.
Because I still have so many questions for you, regardless of the pit and the puppy. You know, there's a million things I want to ask you because I know you travel the world, and I'm following Victoria Travels. I don't know if everybody knows that you have another Instagram page, Victoria Travels, and I'm learning so much. Oh my gosh. Like, you've been to places. I, you know, I'll go somewhere and I'll go, oh my God, look, this church is so old. It was built in 1947. And then you're like, and this castle was built in 100 BC.
You make me sound like Monty Python, but it's true. I love it because I am big history buff. And one of my favorite things to do, especially when I go to England, is to travel around and visit castles and other historical locations. And then I want to share it. So then I put, I mean, I don't have many followers on the Victoria Travels, but hey, if you want to follow me on Victoria Travels, it's Victoria Travels _. And yeah, I mean, I love it. I just post it because it takes me back to where I was.
Well, it makes me want to go travel with you. Or it makes me want to go see those places. And my husband's not a big traveler. So anytime you need someone to carry your bags and talk about something, I'm totally amazed by some of the things that you show. So thank you. I appreciate it. And I'm with you.
Well, you are so welcome. And guys as well, I want to finish this podcast by saying, hey, I got a new TikTok channel. It's at VS Positively. I'm a TikToker.
You well,
folded. It's me or the dog is big on TikTok, right? I don't manage that, but obviously I work with Warner Brothers Digital for that. But I decided because of Positively.com, our amazing new website, please take a course. We have incredible courses so that you can better understand your dog and solve behavior issues and learn how to teach your dog and really amazing courses, great advice on positively.com. So definitely check that out. But we also have the Dog Behavior Conference that is coming up April the 19th to the 21st. I will be interviewing some speakers. We have great speakers, including Mike Shikashio, Robert Hewings, I think I'm all right as a speaker, Lisa and Brad Wagner. We've got some fabulous speakers. And so I'm going to be doing future podcasts with them. But if you want to register for the DBC, go to positively.com/DBC. And you will have 3 days of the most amazing presentations. And if you cannot attend in person, don't worry. Because as long as you register after the conversations go out live or the presentations go out live, then you have access to all of those presentations for a year afterwards. So positively.com/DBC. That's it, Holly. Thank you so much for joining me.
Only a little thing, only a couple little things, you know, like 17 million things on the docket and 20 more to go,
but
it's awesome. Thanks for having me here. It was fun, and I look forward to discussing adolescent dogs.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. For Victoria's online dog training courses, more information, and helpful dog training tips, visit Victoria's official website at positively.com. Get connected on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media as Victoria Stilwell, and follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Learn to become a professional dog trainer with the Victoria Stilwell Academy at vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps you and your dog live your best life together. Positively.